name is Jeffrey Davis. Welcome back to Radio Entrepreneurs. We are featuring the success of entrepreneurship and discussing what it means to be successful with entrepreneurship. My guest host today is Peter Meyerson from Cohn, Resnick, Meyerson & Plaut.
Great to be here, Jeff.
Thank you. And
great to have our next guest.
Our next guest, as you know, is Greg Stoller, our reporter from Boston College on international business. Welcome back, Greg.
Thank you. It's good to be back, Jeffrey and Peter.
Have you been traveling the globe or not
recently? I've not been traveling, but that's coming up next week. With BC's blessing, I'm headed to France for a few days to teach a course for the 11th year in a row.
Wow. In France.
In France.
Ça, c'est bon.
Oui.
I bet you their cafeteria has good food.
Oh, you kidding? It's unbelievable. It's like a food coma. Every single meal is like a food coma. It's really wonderful.
Oh, wow. So what's the interesting topic you're bringing to us today?
The interesting topic is that I mark my calendar by this annually. 2 weeks ago, I just watched nearly 30 entrepreneurs pitch to my students for 5 minutes apiece, followed by 5 minutes of Q&A. They were reviewed by not only the students' own opinions, but also two panels of judges that I employed as volunteers. And as often happens, two-thirds of the 30 got selected. And it's been really interesting to analyze what got a certain idea to get selected versus not get selected.
Is there any trend?
There is a trend. I think this year, as I was looking at the data, it was all about how seriously the presenters responded to the body language of the audience or the body language of the judges. Because let's face it, guys, right? It's a five-minute pitch. It's very carefully scripted. It's very carefully rehearsed. People do not want to depart from their prepared remarks. But that's not how business works. You have to be willing to call an audible. You have to be willing to change what you're saying, even if you don't want to, based on nonverbal communication, how people's eyes are shifting, and the questions that they're asking.
So do you need to give a course in body language?
I don't know if I'm qualified to teach that sort of OB course, but I think having presented a number of times in my life concurrently with what was happening, you know, a couple of weeks ago, I've got some board meetings later for director boards or committees that I serve on, etc. You can't be completely mired in your own message that you want to deliver, no matter how good you might think it is, or on the face of it, no matter how good it is. You have to be willing to take a step back and look around you.
You know, people just don't really understand what it means to be talking to the audience instead of talking from within who you are. Too many people get caught up in who they are and what they think they have to communicate and say versus realizing how people interpret things. And I think you're talking, it's all about the message.
It's all about the message, but I also say it's all about smelling the reactionary roses as well.
I mean, I think in a sense I'm hearing it as it's the delivery of the message. It's not the message.
Correct. Well, I think it's the whole experience.
Yeah.
I'm not suggesting, and I don't think Jeffrey is, or you, Peter, as well, that the message itself is flawed or the message itself lacks integrity or good content. It's a matter that if the audience to whom it's getting delivered isn't responding affirmatively, you've got potentially a problem. And you either have to stop talking and go immediately to Q&A or take a deep breath and try changing what you're saying on the fly in order to see whether the audience's reaction is going to be changing or not.
Yeah, I mean, I assume all of these, presentations were decent presentations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we've had quite a list of ideas this year. We have music that is from Singapore that is trying to get kids to learn different parts of their elementary school education, especially special needs kids. We have surgical devices. We have remote control devices for cars that are going to start. We've got homebrewed beer. I mean, we really have run the gamut amongst the 30 ideas from high-tech to low-tech, for-profit, not-for-profit, U.S. domestic, international, everywhere in between. And I can tell you that these 30 presenters certainly put their time in preparing, in some cases, 6 or 7 months before they came to the classroom to present to the students. But a lot of that is somewhat inconsequential if the audience isn't appreciating what you're having to say.
Yeah, but I mean, you know, what's interesting to me in listening to this is that what got your attention, you know, and got the the people in the audiences and the judges' attention is the way these messages were delivered. You know, how connected were you to the audience? And it really speaks to, you know, what, you know, how people need to understand that their interpersonal skills.
So that's why I feel so fortunate to be able to teach this class and run this program. Every year, it's somewhat of a moving target. We tend to focus on something else. A few years ago, it was X. 2 years ago, it might have been Y. I would say last year, the focus was on improving the quality of the two-page write-ups and the five-minute PowerPoint deck that each of the presenters delivered so that the students would really understand potentially what they would be getting into, but more importantly, what the three or four areas that the business plan was going to cover so that everybody is rowing in the same boat. This year, obviously, with the somewhat apathetic approach that some of the presenters took to audience reaction, I think next year's focus is going to be on improving the live presentation as well.
Looking back, would you say that the last year's and the year before's were as apathetic?
I wouldn't say, and maybe apathy is too strong of a term. Okay. I just think that it's a very rare person. And by the way, the two-thirds that got selected, I've watched the videos, and it's clear that they, you know, were able to change their prepared remarks, or at least what the audience was saying resonated with them in Q&A. Those were the 20 out of 30 that ultimately got selected. So whether you say the other 10 were apathetic or not, I think is probably a little bit over the top in terms of being critical. But I think it's directionally correct that you're not, as Jeffrey just said, you're not just presenting. You're presenting to a live panel of people.
You know, there are thousands of great business ideas, but there aren't thousands. For every great business idea, there isn't a great leader or a great entrepreneur. And that's what you're saying. And you really have to look the person in the eye, hear and feel that they really understand their business, that they understand how to make it work in the marketplace, that they know how to make people work to make it happen. And you don't get that from a piece of paper.
I actually am approaching it somewhat differently, but again, in the same spirit, is that no executive is going to be hired to implement their business plan, that company's business plan, verbatim. Those executives are getting hired to bob and weave and to make decisions on the fly as new information is presented to them. That's how you're successful in business.
Right. The adaptability and the ability to lead and be an entrepreneur. And that can't, and that's not necessarily an academic. People who can write term papers aren't necessarily great entrepreneurs.
I couldn't agree with you more.
Right. It's a totally different function. Good entrepreneurs can hire people who can write good term papers.
Right. Absolutely. But, you know, Peter, to your point, if you want to have a perfect presentation, go into a studio similar to the one we're sitting in, either with video cameras or with microphones, practice 15 times, and eventually you will have a perfectly delivered presentation. That doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be funded.
Right.
Yeah, no. Right. I mean, I think practice.
Right.
And getting used to the environment that you're in.
And now, of course, that was just 1 week out of the course. The fun has started. The teams have been assigned. I've got 20 volunteer mentors who are working with each of the 20 teams on a one-to-one basis. I've got 10 third-year law students from BC's Law School who are working with two teams apiece, helping them assess the legal issues affecting their ventures. And now over the next 10 weeks, it's 17 teams technically. Those 17 teams are going to push forward and write full-length business plans for these entrepreneurs. All of the work completed free of charge, and the entrepreneurs maintain all IP rights.
Now, let me ask you, your world of academics has a lot, hundreds of moving parts. The trips to France, the trips to China, the trips to Vietnam, the different study groups, the competitions. Is this all in your head, or do you have some giant spreadsheet in your, like in an office in your house that has everything coordinated for the calendar year?
My wife would probably not want to answer that question. I think that my home office looks like Fort Knox because I have...
Because she's not allowed in?
Well, not only that, I've got folders on top of folders on my computer, and I try and bring everything out to two or three decimal places because there's no other way for me to do it. If I don't, I risk that you're going to be, I'm saying this facetiously, that you're going to have an extra student who hasn't been assigned to a team, or you're going to expect 20 people to show up and 19 show up, and you're going to say, uh-oh, we've got a problem, and I'm not talking about calling Houston.
The other thing I'd be worried about is, I'm not trying to get you in trouble with Boston College. You know, a traditional professor, which I'm not a supporter of, comes into the class with one or two textbooks at the beginning of the year and then teaches the textbook chapter by chapter. Easily replaceable. Now, you, on the other hand, are not easily replaceable. I'm not trying to get you in trouble.
No, I appreciate you saying that. I think that the business world is moving so dynamically these days is I don't necessarily think that any class could be repeated verbatim. Now, let's be honest. There are many of classes that we've got wonderful colleagues at BC who are excellent researchers. They bring in grant money. I don't know how to do that sort of thing, and it's because of them that the university has achieved the prestige it has. But for my classes on entrepreneurship, I just can't think of any other way to teach it. That the thought of repeating something a second time in a course like business planning or bringing students over to consult to China, I just don't think it's something that lends itself to being duplicated year after year.
No, but you. But if somebody came up to you who was an entrepreneur, they could sort of pull you out of the university and do sort of a Greg Stoller system and have you travel the world and do this.
Now, I'm not
trying to get you in trouble.
No,
again.
I appreciate that. I think that that is certainly possible. I just, for me personally, I love the challenge of running a company and also being able to hopefully continue to add value in the classroom. But I would agree with you that I'm trying to run it as a business as opposed to a traditional class, because the nature of what we're talking about just isn't traditional.
And is there over the years, how long have you been doing this?
I've been fortunate to be doing this for 14 years.
Oh my God. Is there a sort of a Greg Stoller alumni group?
it's funny you say that. I am fortunate enough that I'm able to keep in touch with about 20% of my students after they graduate every year. So after having done this for more than a decade, I'm very, very lucky that I have a great bunch of alums who I can turn to that are judges on these panels or offer ideas for the programs, or if they're international, they'll host our groups either for consulting assignments or when we're going over to Asia to visit companies, etc. And that to me is sort of the added benefit of being lucky enough to be able to do this year after year and really develop a nice showing. And that's, of course, not to say there's a huge, almost rabid, I mean this positively, Boston College Alumni Network. So it's just a great place to be, and I just can't get enough of it. I love it year after year.
Wow. Impressive, Peter, isn't it?
Very impressive.
Greg, if somebody wants to get hold of you, and you shouldn't just say your email address. We also know you have a radio show on Radio Entrepreneurs Network, and you also have your TV show.
Thank you.
Could you just give us a little list?
Sure. So I'm fortunate enough that our television show, The Language of Business, is broadcast on 67 stations in 23 states across the country and widely distributed on YouTube. We've got 12,000 viewers per episode. You can check that out at my blog, which is bclob.com. BC as in Boston College, LOB, languageofbusiness.com. If you need to reach me personally, I would suggest to use my Boston College email address, which is gregory.stoller.1@bc.edu, gregory.stoller.1@bc.edu.
Wow. Greg Stoller, a true force of nature. I'm sitting here with Peter Myerson, Cohn Raznick, Myerson & Plough, thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you for the opportunity. It's great,
thanks,
as always.
Greg.
We're going to take a break, and hopefully we'll be right back after these messages.